From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1997 in a Rochester courtroom. And it's a courtroom that looks like any courtroom you've ever seen, as our colleague Caitlin White recently reported. Panel of jurors to the right, attorneys and defendants to the left. But this courtroom is different. Everyone in front of the room is between the ages of 16 and 19 years old. This is Rochester Teen Court, which recently turned 20 years old. Judge Frank Geraci helped launch the court and presides over cases, and he stresses that this is a very serious court with significant consequences. When teen juries call for community service, the judge says they can be pretty severe, sometimes recommending 100 hours, when a judge would typically recommend 10. In other words, this is not a courtroom where teen defendants get off the hook easily. But it matters. Rates of teenage incarceration have been a significant challenge and a problem in this country, particularly when you look at rates of high school graduation and then rates of adult incarceration. There are racial justice issues as well. This hour, we want to discuss the impact of 20 years of teen court in Rochester, especially with two major themes in mind. First, teen court in the era of raising the age of criminal responsibility, and second, teen court in the context of mass incarceration. My guests include Judge Frank Geraci, Chief United States District Judge. Nice to have you here. Judge, thanks for taking the time for us.
Thank you.
Also with us, Janae Robinson is a teen juror with Rochester Teen Court. Janae, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Francis Pellegrino is senior counsel, a teen attorney with the Rochester Teen Court. Francis, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Kendra Drake is program manager for Rochester Teen Court. Kendra, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go back. We're going to start by going back to the mid-90s. And Judge, take us back to the beginning and how this really got started.
Sure. I was a Rochester City Court judge, and I was watching young individuals come back and forth into the court. They'd be arrested, we'd have a disposition, and they would be back soon. Right after the drug court was formed, we actually had a meeting with the police chief at the time, Robert Warshaw, and he suggested we look at the teen court. We didn't know what teen court was. Judge Schwartz and myself, along with Van White, who was then working for the Mayor Johnson, traveled to Galveston, Texas, to look at their program there. And they had a teen court in which teens presided over the proceedings. Teens act as the attorneys, as the jurors, and determine what the sentence in the case should be. We brought that model back to Rochester, and Mayor Johnson liked it, but he wanted us to bring it up a step. So in Rochester, we actually are very unique in that we deal with individuals who have been charged with crimes and violations, not involved with violence. We have teenagers that serve as the jurors, as the attorneys, and we have real judges presiding over the cases. Again, as you indicated, to show why this is an important court and show it's a serious court. If individuals don't comply with the sentence of the teen court jurors, then that case goes back to the regular court. In other words, somebody charged with petty larceny could get a year in jail. In teen court, they can't get jail. They get community service or essays or any reasonable disposition that the teen jury feels is appropriate. If they don't complete that sentence, it goes back to the Rochester City Court, and a judge could impose that year in jail.
If they do follow through on the sentence, can they expunge their record?
Absolutely. The whole key of the program is also to expunge that record so that these young people are making mistakes, they don't have prior records, they're not involved with violence, they can move on. But the importance of the program is to have the teen jurors send them a message, and the message is simply, we are working with you, we can help you move in a new direction so you don't come back to court. And that's worked extremely well over the last 20 years.
How many teens go through teen court?
In a year? Kendra could probably answer that better than I can right now.
I would say roughly 200.
Roughly 200. Okay. And when it comes to recidivism, Judge Geraci has told us in the past that you think, well, first of all, recidivism, it doesn't eliminate recidivism. But you think about the mid-1990s, you were seeing a lot of the same faces, weren't you, for these nonviolent offenses?
Absolutely. And we have traced recidivism in this program, and it's tremendously changed. Recidivism typically in the 70% range where young people come back into court, and that's been reduced to somewhere around 30% who individuals should actually complete this program. Again, one of the unique features of this is that we are slowing the system down, taking the opportunity to talk to teens. When I was a Rochester City Court judge, we handled thousands of cases a year, and you don't have the time to do that. You have to move the cases through the system so you can pick out the cases that are unique in that the individuals haven't been involved before in criminal activity, and there's an issue that you can work with, you can prevent them from coming back. So it's a way to slow the system down, show individuals we care enough to spend the time with them to acknowledge we understand they're young, they made a mistake, but we can work with them to prevent them from coming back.
What do the opponents of this kind of a setup usually say, Judge?
Well, it's kind of like when the drug court came into existence, when Veterans Court came into existence, the mental health court. It's kind of a situation where people feel it's a do-gooder program. But when they see an operation, they realize it's not that at all. It's an opportunity to move people in the right direction. I remember when drug court was started with Judge Schwartz, there was opposition by law enforcement because they felt this was not the direction you should take with individuals involved with narcotics. And what happened is after they saw how the program worked, when you deal with a person's underlying problems, they understood the program. And now law enforcement often present certificates of graduation to individuals who complete the drug court. So, you know, I've been involved in this for a long time as a prosecutor, both in state level, federal level, and as a judge. Alcohol problems, drug problems, and mental health problems underlie most of our criminal activity. If we can deal with those issues, then we can hopefully move people in a new direction. We're not going to save everybody, but to save those individuals that are willing to take the help is certainly well worth the effort.
And that recidivism rate, I'm going to say it again. The judge was saying around 70% recidivism for these nonviolent offenses committed by teenagers before teen court, and through the teens who complete teen court, 30%, roughly 30%.
Yes.
That's a remarkable change. Let me also read a little bit from the Annie Casey Foundation has studied some of the data here. And so 2011 report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, No Place for Kids, the Case for Reducing Juvenile Incarceration, noted that the sum of state and federal taxpayer dollars spent on this system, around $88,000 a year to incarcerate a juvenile for 9 to 12 months in that study, with states spending a combined $5 billion in a single year. And then the Casey Foundation study found what we can all assume to be true, but it's nice to put actual research behind it, which is this. Assignment to a judge with a high incarceration rate in other cases leads to a significantly lower likelihood of high school completion and a significantly higher likelihood of incarceration as an adult, including incarceration for violent crimes as an adult. In other words, if you're a teenager and you are incarcerated, the outcomes are really, really skewed, and they're not good. Graduating from high school, future violent behavior possibility, future criminal behavior. And so the desire to avoid that is backed by research and data. Judge, have you had people say to you since 1997, you know, I was wrong about this?
People who have seen this program certainly say that, because there's a lot of different aspects of this program. Educational benefit. You'll talk to the individuals who serve as attorneys and jurors in our system, and they learn a lot about how the system works. Accountability. Those who have been arrested and go through the system understand that they have a responsibility to pay back the community and service to the community. It's usually one of the aspects of all the teen court defendants here is community service of some aspect. And one part of the community service required for every defendant in this program is that they serve as a juror in a future case. So you have teens ruling regarding other teens, and it works well.
And I'm also looking at stats from the U.S. Department of Justice. On any given day in the United States, roughly 70,000 juvenile criminal offenders live in residential detention facilities. And by the way, here is something that we should probably get to this hour at some point. About 68% are racial minorities. That's according to the Department of Justice. But that overall number, 70,000 on any given day, is down 42% since 1997. And so my assumption, Judge, is that Rochester was getting on board with teen court run. Probably a lot of other cities were as well. And we've seen that kind of an impact. Is that a fair assumption?
It is. What you're seeing now is a development throughout the at least New York State and other states of these type of programs, youth programs, which now work with the underlying issues with the teens. Our state was very fortunate to have a Chief Judge, Judith Kay, who was very supportive of this program. It's kind of a unique story. She called me one day looking for a Judge Geraci in Buffalo instead of Rochester. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this program. Once I described it to her, she fell in love with it and supported the program. She came to our teen court auction every year, buying different items and supporting this program, talking about it, and developing youth courts throughout the state.
All right, I see our phone starting to ring, and I want to talk to some of the other members of the panel about their roles here. But listeners, if you've got comments or questions as we talk about teen incarceration, teen court, and these efforts at restorative justice and more, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And maybe it's best to start with a phone call with a question on how things work here. So I'll start with Alex in Rochester. Go ahead, Alex.
Yes, can you tell me, you mentioned community service, and I wonder if you can tell me when community service sentencing started in Rochester City Court, and how did it all come about? Who was behind it? How did that happen?
Yeah, thank you, Alex. Judge, you want to take that?
Sure. Actually, one of the innovators of the community service program through the City Court of Rochester was Judge William Bristol. Judge Bristol started the program before I became a City Court judge, obviously to indicate that people can pay back to the community as opposed to a jail sentence or even a probation sentence, and it proved to be very worthwhile. Community service involving working in the city, helping clean the streets, the parks. One example would be if there was a criminal mischief where somebody's business was damaged, to have the person who created the damage go back and fix the damage to that property is much more beneficial than sending the person to jail for 5 days or 10 days or 15 days. The program has worked over decades because of Judge Bristol. I think give him a lot of credit for starting the program.
All right. Thanks, Alex, for the phone call. Let me turn to Kendra Drake, who's a program manager for Rochester Teen Court. And you mentioned that in any given year, maybe 200 teens going through the program here. But let's talk about how the court itself is made up, you know, where the juries come from and where a prosecutor comes from. And what kind of makeup, what are all the moving parts of Rochester Teen Court?
So Rochester Teen Court is made up by volunteers. A lot of students are looking for community service to graduate from high school. And most of the time I go into these high schools, I reach out to counselors and I ask them, hey, do you have any students that need some community service hours to graduate? And they will have me come into class and I will speak about Rochester Teen Court. And a lot of these kids will go through juror orientation. And we talk about the importance of confidentiality and how being in the courtroom and, you know, protecting the confidentiality, because the goal is to help this teen move past the situation that they're in. So I go into these schools, and that's how I recruit volunteers to come and become jurors. And most of them show interest in becoming a teen attorney. And we have teen attorneys take a mini bar exam so they can become teen attorneys. And that's how they start presiding over cases in teen court.
Is that what you did, Francis?
Yes, I did. I started as an attorney about a year ago. And before that, I did some mediation sessions.
Okay. How did you first hear about all of this? How did this come together for you?
Well, that was actually before Kendra took over the program. Mm-hmm. I actually heard about it through a referral from a friend of mine. I've been interested in law from a very young age, and we were both doing some mock trial competitions together. And so this is, of course, the next level of both experience and service. And so he recommended that I check out the Rochester Teen Court program, and here we are today, about a year and a half later.
Okay. Where do you go to school?
I go to McQuaid.
Okay. And this program then is how many hours a week for you? Give me a sense for what a week of work in teen court is like for you.
So we don't have adjudicative, in-court hearings every week, but on a week where I have a decent caseload, I would say 15 to 20 hours at a minimum.
And what is your role as let's see, you're the senior counsel. What's your role in teen court?
Well, so I serve as an attorney. Both the prosecutors and the defense attorneys are teens. I mainly serve as a defense counsel, okay, but I do fill in on prosecution every once in a while. So really, everyone is working toward the good. And as a defense attorney, you get the opportunity to do more than simply try a case. You do more than interview your clients and write examinations and that sort of thing. You have an opportunity to also mentor the kids who you're working with. Of course, there's always a line in between client and friend, but I think that teen court gives a good opportunity to reach across that boundary and foster a lot of potential and build a lot of connections in between the attorneys and the youth coming through the program.
And let me turn now to a juror, and that's John A. Robinson, who is a teen juror with Rochester Teen Court. For how long? How long have you been doing it?
I've actually been doing this since October.
Since October?
Yes.
How do you like it?
I love it. I think it's a great opportunity, and I feel like every teen should do this in their life.
And Johnny, where do you go to school?
I go to Rochester Academy Charter School.
And how did you hear about Teen Court?
Me, actually, I was involved in some trouble, and I started out doing what I had to do, but I actually loved it, so I continued to do it. I got everything I needed to get done, and I still do it to this day.
All right, so I don't want to pry too much, but did you go through Teen Court yourself?
Yes.
You did, okay. And did you have to do some community service of some kind?
Yes, I did.
Are you able to describe that for us?
Yes, I did community service at like a rec center, Humble Street, actually. I did it there. I did it at Food Link. I would help like put the food in the bags and stuff so that it could get shipped off to the kids in need and stuff. It's actually, I love that too. I love doing it.
Okay, and so that was your sentence, but now you help put together sentences for others as a teen juror. Did you decide going through that process that, you know, this would be a good thing for you to do once you got through the community service yourself? You wanted to get on a jury?
Yes. I feel like it actually keeps me occupied. It's like a great thing for teens to have when they're like not doing anything. Mm-hmm. It's something to keep you occupied. Like you learn so many different things. You get to see different stuff. Everything is just, it's great.
Johnny, I want to ask you about your experience on both sides of Teen Court, because one of the goals that we've been talking about is making sure that we don't take a mistake that a teenager makes and sign up the rest of their life to be much more difficult or, you know, sort of sealed in a negative direction. Have you thought much about that? I mean, could things have gone differently for you?
Yes, they actually, I felt like if I wouldn't have done Teen Court, it would have been way different. Probably would have been in jail or out on the streets or somewhere.
Okay. And have you thought about, and I don't know what led you to Teen Court, have you thought about why you did what you did and why you think that your life was going in that direction?
Honestly, I felt like my emotions were taking over my actions. Like, I would have changed it. Like, I really, if I could, I would change it. Because it's not a good thing to let your emotions take over your actions.
Okay. And the sentence that you got doing community service in a couple of different ways, did you think it was fair?
Actually, yes. Yes, I do, because I was rebellious, let's say. So I feel like to pay back what I did, that was actually really fair.
Did you learn anything beyond just completing those hours to say, hey, if I complete these hours, at least I don't have to go through what we would call the normal court system? Or did you feel like, you know, you really learned something out of doing the service?
I actually did. I learned a lot. I learned that it's other ways to handle problems, situations. Like, it's other ways to do everything, and you got to take your best route. Like, don't let one situation mess up everything for you.
What kind of a future do you envision for yourself now?
I want to own a bakery and an event planning business. So I'm ready to go to college and just go.
That's awesome.
Go for it.
What do you like to bake?
Everything. Mostly cakes. Yeah. I can do good things. Cakes is my best thing.
Where'd you learn that? Is that in your family?
Yeah, my grandma, both of my grandmas actually. They love to bake, and I always like was behind them, helping them out.
I love the story, and I wish you well in that. And now, as a member of the jury, one of the things the judge had told our reporter Caitlin White this past fall was, you know, if you think that teen juries are going any softer on their peers, you need to be disabused of that notion. And one of the examples you gave, Judge, was that, you know, there are times where a teen jury will recommend, say, 100 hours of community service, where a judge might have said 10. What happens in those situations?
Well, what we had to do is actually lower the parameters for that. We put a maximum of 50 hours, because teens, it's sometimes are very tough. Janine's story is, I think, terrific and a good example of how this program works. Your question regarding what she's good at, what she likes to do, is a question I ask every defendant in a case, because I learned early on in this career that individuals have strengths. And if you can build on the positives, on the strengths, then you can move them in a new direction. They're usually surprised to hear that question. One example I give you is an individual who was involved with graffiti, painting on the side of buildings. And I asked him what his strength was. It was art. He was an artist. And so he wound up designing a shirt for the teen court a few years back that had been used for the teen attorneys and jurors going out and doing community service. It was a terrific example of how you can take a negative and turn it into a positive.
Francis, in terms of your role as a counsel, again, more typically on the defense side, are you going in trying to learn as much as you can about a case and essentially playing the same role that you would in what we would say is the normal legal system? How much do you try to learn about the teenagers who are in that situation, and how do you see the outcomes typically going?
Well, I really do double duty. So, of course, a priority is to treat the case like a normal case, as any attorney would, to do interviews, to get the facts, and lay out a valid argument. But at the end of the day, I've come to learn that it's not really about winning the case, so to speak. It's really about helping the youth go through the program and get the most out of it. So as important as it is to build a good case, I also try to serve my clients in other ways. So whatever they need, be it some counseling personally about something that they're going through in their life, if they need to be directed to a professional counselor or even referred to another attorney for, let's say, a change of living situation, for example, I'm always there to do whatever I can. And especially on a personal level, attorneys were there for me at earlier times in my life, and they really became the heroes. And so ever since that time, I've needed to serve society in the same way.
And Francis, have you had to kind of take a little crash course in the law at all? I mean, how good do you feel about the law, knowing the law?
Well, let me tell you, mock trial competitions do not prepare you fully for.
They can be pretty good.
They can be pretty good.
But yeah, I hear the point.
I remember the first day walking in, I was really nervous, and just like I've heard from a lot of full-fledged attorneys, who also, by the way, mentor the teen attorneys. You learn a lot on the job. And so I have definitely taken it upon myself to do some law school reading and read up on the relevant material. But I think that the best experience and the most learning goes on with the interactions in the cases and in the courtroom itself.
And John A. now is a member of juries. We were talking about how juries don't go light, you know, with some of the sentencing. What's your mindset as a juror? What do you think your role in that job on the teen court is?
Well, I feel like you get what you deserve. Like, even if that's your friend, whatever it may be, if they did what they did, they gotta serve what they did. You don't get no, let's say, easy way out. Mm-hmm. You're gonna serve your time.
And if it works out, if you've done your job as a jury, you're going to put an appropriate sentence. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen for the person who goes through that sentence?
They serve their time, or whatever the verdict is. We can serve them anything, like essay, mm-hmm. apology letter, mm-hmm. A second jury session, anything. They serve it. They learn from it. Hopefully, they go on about their life. But I feel like even after that, you should continue to do it.
You just mentioned one of the things that does come up on occasion, apology letters. Kendra, how often do we see that?
Very often. For a lot of victims, we tell them, we sentence you to an apology letter. But it also means, does the defendant really mean what they say? So we try to impose apology letters. Just to say, because a lot of them be like, I'm sorry, I was having a bad day, things was going on. I really didn't mean to do what I did. As Janae said, your emotions sometimes get the best of you. A lot of kids say that. So I try to make sure, I'd be like, well, if you're sorry, that's something that we can impose as part of your sentence is an apology letter. We let our defendants, we ask them sometimes, what do you think is an appropriate sentence for you? And the crime that you have committed. And they will tell us, so their attorney will, in their closing arguments, will speak on those sentence requirements on what the defendant feel is an appropriate sentence for them. And some people pick apology letters because they're truly sorry for what they've done.
And Kendra, just for our listeners to remind them, these are for nonviolent offenses. So what are the kinds of offenses? I mean, there's a wide range, but what are the kinds of offenses?
We deal with misdemeanor offenses, which is petty larceny, false impersonation, disorderly conduct, harassment, it goes awry, criminal mischief, graffiti, as the judge mentioned. So we deal with more of those lower nonviolent offenders.
Do you have some defendants who roll their eyes at the idea of an apology letter?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah, I mean, I do think to some degree we have a society where we're getting a little bit away from the personal impact of our actions and that kind of accountability. So maybe they roll their eyes at first, but what are some of the results you've seen come out of just the act of doing that?
When they actually, I say, well, think about it. You know, you may not be feeling it this day, but tomorrow you may feel differently. And some of them, they do. They send them to me through email. So they'll send me their apology letter, and it's really genuine. You know, it makes me be like, wow, they really are sympathetic, and they really apologize for the things that they have done. Sometimes, like you said, there's sometimes they roll their eyes like, I don't want to do that. Even community service, they roll their eyes and say, I don't want to do that. But then they end up doing it. And then they end up liking it. I got a lot of kids that come back and they say, thank you for sentencing me to community service. I say, it wasn't me. It was the jury that sentenced you to community service. And they really like it. And we have some defendants that has actually got a job from community service.
Wow. Do you have some face-to-face meeting ever between the defendant and the person that they harmed in some way with their actions?
Sometimes. So I send them an invitation, the person that they're harmed, if they want to come hear their case as they go in front of a jury of their peers, they're more than welcome to come testify as well.
Hmm. Johnny, did you have to write an apology letter?
I actually did. At first, when I first started, I'm like, I'm not going to do this because it was my emotions. But once I really sat and thought about it, like, I really was sorry about it because nobody deserved what I, like, the behavior I was given, it was just not deserved.
Did you feel any different after writing that letter?
It actually took a load off my shoulders. Like, I felt a sense of relief and come into, like, a, I don't know what to call it, but it was like a closing for me, like a closure.
Yeah. And now, as a member of the jury here, just take me through what kind of a sentence you think. When is an apology letter appropriate? When is community service? And then if it's community service, it could be community service, I'm assuming, in a lot of different places, right? I mean, you mentioned Food Link, and where else was the other one?
The rec center.
Centers, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So how do you figure out where community service is needed or appropriate?
It depends on what your case could be about. Like, if you did something in school or somewhere around there, you can do it at, like, your school. You can do it, really, rec centers, anywhere. Like, as long as you're serving to your community, we feel like that's appropriate. Like, that's how we is.
Okay. Well, we're talking about Rochester Teen Court. 1997 it launched, so it's recently turned 20 years old. And I got an email from a listener named Delton who says, I'm interested in how the new Raise the Age legislation will affect the administration of the teen court. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and talk about that in the context of teen court and the impact of 20 years in Rochester of teen court. You just heard John A. Robinson, who's a teen juror with teen court, and Kendra Drake, the program manager. Francis Pellegrino is senior counsel with Rochester Teen Court, and Judge Frank Geraci Jr. is chief United States district judge who was intimately involved with the creation of this court and has done a lot of work over the years with not only the people on our panel here, but hundreds, if not thousands now, of members of our community. Recidivism rates falling from 70% typically for nonviolent teenage offenses to about 30% for teenagers who go through this program and complete it. So it's pretty remarkable stuff. We'll come back and we'll get Delton's email answered. And that's a great question when we come back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, the Supreme Court clears the way for sports gambling in the entire United States. What does that mean for us locally? What does that mean for gambling addiction and more? We'll explore it. In our second hour, Kanye West's recent comments about Donald Trump have sparked controversy. We'll hear from the local music community about the impact of those comments. That's Wednesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Judge Geraci just handed me the program for the initial opening, Monday, June 9th, 1997. You remember that day?
I do.
And I'm looking at the list here, and you pointed out a name. So the program included a junior at Wilson Magnin High, Malik Evans. What was Malik's role at the
time? That's right. Malik was trained as an attorney at the time. Did a great job. And, of course, he went on to become president of the school board and now city council member. I just talked to him recently about this because we have a teen court auction coming up this week. We hope he'll attend and tell his story. He indicated, as Francis did, that you develop a lot of skills in the teen court. He developed a confidence in public speaking in public during the teen court sessions and, of course, went on to a terrific career in serving this community.
And still is serving the community. How often do you see that, Judge? Do you occasionally bump into people who've gone through the teen court system and you see them doing things in our community?
We do. We do. And, they talk about, as both Francis and Janae have indicated, about their experience and how it's made them open their eyes and turn them around. I had one individual who was charged with smoking marijuana in public years ago. He didn't think it was a very big issue at all. He said his neighbor smoked, his friends smoked, it wasn't a big deal. However, the teen jury at the time ordered him to write an essay on the effects of marijuana, participate in a drug and treatment program, and serve on a jury as well as doing community service. He did all that. And by the time he came back, he had really turned around, and he was trained as an attorney in the teen court as well. So we see the success stories.
Now, I want to go to Delton's email. Delton emailed the program and just wanted to know how, I'll read the email. Thank you, Delton, for this. He said, I'm interested in how the new Raise the Age legislation will affect the administration of the teen court. Judge, first of all, remind our listeners when we say raise the age, we're talking about criminal responsibility. Put it in context for them, but what that means, and then we'll talk about how it impacts teen court. But when we say raise the age, we mean what?
Sure. There's a recent law passed in New York State in which individuals under the age of 18 will no longer be treated as adults. Now, it's every year it's going to change to a different, I think it's 16 this year, 17, then 18 eventually. So those individuals will not be treated as criminals in the criminal justice system. Right now, we have what's called a youthful offender adjudication for individuals under the age of 19, but they are in the criminal justice system and only later are their records sealed. Under the Raise the Age, they will not be in the criminal justice system at all. They'll typically be handled by family court. And I think this presents a great opportunity for this program because we have all the foundation of it for individuals who will now be going to family court to be referred to the teen court to deal with their underlying issues and go through the system in teen court and hopefully lead them in new directions. So I think this Raise the Age program presents a tremendous opportunity. As was indicated, the only paid staff member is Kendra. This is a volunteer organization. All the teens who serve as jurors, as attorneys, and the judges. We have judges from family court, city court, county court, Supreme Court, now federal court, that preside over these sessions. They volunteer their time. So the only funding is for Kendra's position. I think the Raise the Age should be an opportunity to invest in these kids. You indicated it costs $88,000 to incarcerate a teenager. If we could take that money and put it into programs like this, we would not have to spend that money incarcerating our teens.
Yeah, I mean, and that's roughly in line. That's a little more expensive than I hear the typical average incarceration of an American citizen around $60,000 a year. But the N.E. Casey Foundation's 2011 study and subsequent research indicates that it could be around $85,000 to $90,000 to incarcerate teenagers. It's a lot of money that taxpayers take on every year. We also, Judge, have a disproportionate number of teenagers of color going into the system. Do we have an imbalance? Is there racial injustice in the system?
Well, I think what we see in the city of Rochester, particularly in city court, you're going to see a number of minorities who are defendants in this court. One of the aspects of this program was to recruit only from the city of Rochester originally. When Mayor Johnson supported this program, he wants to stay with city kids. So with city students who are trained as teen attorneys and teen jurors. And that is tremendous because the jurors reflect the community. Now, we find that in our criminal justice system. I found that as a state judge, as a federal judge, that our jurors often don't reflect and represent the community. Teen court, it's entirely different. We have teens that reflect the defendants in the community, and I think that helps give credibility to the program.
What do you think, Kendra?
I actually agree with him. I see a lot of minorities come through teen court, and now we are branching out to the towns. So we're currently serving Greece as well now. We're out in Greece, and we're getting cases from Greece as well, from the Greece school district. City school district, of course, still majority are coming from the city of Rochester. So our goal is to serve Monroe County as a whole. So with Raise the Age coming into play, I think this is a great opportunity for teen court, and hopefully we'll be able to build our brand and build our staff and be able to hold more teen court sessions. As Francis mentioned, we currently do two sessions a month. One's an adjudicative session, which is with a presiding judge, and then we do a restorative session as well once a month.
This is what's interesting to me, Judge, and this is really sort of nuanced and a delicate question on the interplay of race in our society. And there's not an easy answer for this. But when we talk about juries generally not reflecting, and we're speaking very generally, obviously, here, but when we see juries that don't really reflect the communities they're serving or the defendants that they are assigned to cases that involve a defendant of color, the concern is that sort of implicit bias might lead to decisions that might not be made if there was more representation. That is not the same, though, as saying if there are more jurors of color, that they would go easier. Because what you're saying is in teen court, it's the opposite. You have reflection and representation in the community, but the juries, by and large, are not looking to go easy. There are times they want to sentence to more hours or what we would call a tougher sentence, but focused on a way that is more restorative. And it's a delicate, it's not an easy sort of, well, would outcomes be different if this or if that? I'm wondering, you know, from your perspective, though, can you elaborate on just the value of representation for those juries?
Sure. That's something that I've emphasized throughout my career. In New York State, they've expanded the jury pool to include a number of resource lists, including Department of Motor Vehicles, Department of Taxation, Department of Labor, Social Services, and Department Voter Registration. In federal court, when I came there, I found out that the only lists utilized were voter registration and DMV records. So we actually went to New York State, and under the support of both Joe Morelli and Joe Robach, got the law changed in New York. So we can now, in federal court, utilize all the same lists New York State use, and therefore hopefully we'll have more expansive resource lists and therefore more representative jurors. We're finding that just changed recently, and we are the first district in the United States to expand our juror list, resources to that degree. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to see that.
And when it comes to Raise the Age, by the way, there were some conversations last year in particular when there was a pretty heated debate about this. Important to kind of point out again, teen court and Raise the Age, at least teen court, not for violent offenses. Raise the Age, you know, when we're talking about capital offenses, Judge, you know, for listeners who might be going, well, if you're 16, but if you commit a homicide, et cetera, does this mean you're no longer considered an adult? You want to answer that question for listeners who may have that?
Yeah, that is a fallacy. Individuals involved in violent crimes will still be handled in the criminal justice system. There's things called juvenile offenders, and if there's certain crimes that are committed, sex crimes, robberies, burglaries, or violent assaults or homicides, they will still be treated as adults.
Let me ask the judge and all of you this question then, because we did hear from a significant percentage of listeners last year when we talked about Raise the Age, and we talked to some members of the law enforcement community who didn't like the idea of raising the age of criminal responsibility. A lot of it was based on accountability, and, you know, if you're 16, if you're 17, if you do wrong, you know, you shouldn't just be taken away, have your adult responsibility removed from that. We're not even talking about violent crimes necessarily. Judge, when it comes to accountability, I know you've heard those arguments, and I know there are some very respected members of law enforcement in this community who are going to disagree with you on this. What do you say about the accountability aspect when we talk raising the age?
Sure. Well, let me give you an example. One of the reasons this program was started was because of the fact that individuals would come in on nonviolent activity, receive a sentence of conditional discharge, community service. They'd go away and really not consider very seriously. Then they'd come back into the system. Teen court is actually a tough program, because they have to attend a teen court session, they have to later serve as a juror, and they have to carry out the sentence of the teen jury, whatever they've imposed. It could be community service, could be a program, could be an essay, could be a letter of apology. Parents get involved. We often invite parents in because we need to hear from them. Why is this individual acting the way they are? It's very helpful to the teen jurors. So I think there is a lot of accountability in these alternative programs. And that's teen court, and I think raise the age. If we can slow the system down as well and raise the age through the family court system with programs like teen court, we can address the underlying problems, I think, prevent people from coming back. And I think that is truly accountability.
And Kendra, how would you answer the accountability question that people have?
I think that they do very well with taking accountability. Accountability is something that we have them sign, accountability, knowledge of accountability when they first come through teen court, that basically you're acknowledging you did what they say you did. And for instance, a school fight, you engaged in that fight is basically, so it's disorderly conduct. They're acknowledging that they've taken accountability for that altercation that happened in the school building. So they take accountability, but I make them, with teen court makes you work for that ACD. It's not just given. So I think that that's, teen court is a great program because we're making them work for it. You want your record expunged, let's work for it together. Let's get to the underlying issues so we can make your first encounter with the criminal justice system be your last.
Yeah. Francis, how do you feel about the question on accountability and raise the age?
Well, first of all, I don't want to speak beyond my personal knowledge. So sticking to its effect on teen court, I think that the program teaches more accountability than the regular criminal justice system. Building off of what Judge Gerasi and Kendra were talking about, there is a lot of personal interaction with the youth that come through the program, and a lot of very dedicated and qualified mentors, from the attorneys to Kendra to the counselors that we have at the Center for Youth, all try to personally work with the youth and guide them away from ending up back in the system. You know, if they were tried in the regular criminal justice system, they could do their time, get out, and do it again. And there's not a lot of guidance in that path, and there is certainly a lot of opportunity for repetition. Hmm. But with teen court, hopefully, at least, you're in once and you're never back again.
John A., did you feel like anybody went easy on you when you had to go through teen court?
No, not at all. It was, at first it was tough, but once you like actually think about what you did and you take responsibility for it, you realize that you're not just getting your future taken away from you. So I think it got more to do with that for me, at least. Like, I realized that I got a second opportunity to make it right and not just sit in a jailhouse or something. And if, like Francis is saying, if you come out and you can do it again, like, I feel like that's a great opportunity for everybody.
Well, on the phone, we've got the person who was on that 97 program. Malik Evans is on the line with us. Hello, Malik.
Hey, how's it going? And boy, do I feel old.
No, you're supposed to feel wise, Malik.
Yes. No, I just wanted to call in and just really give kudos to this program. You know, I didn't even go on to be an attorney. But I was a teen attorney when we started in teen court. But I think it's important for the community to understand the skills that the young people garner, particularly those that serve as attorneys. Those are skills that I took throughout my career and used. So this program is great. And the other thing I just wanted to add was in terms of the preventative aspect of this program. You know, we spend so much time intervening when problems happen. This program does a great job of ensuring that we keep kids out of the criminal justice system. We hope that for so many of these kids, this is their first and last stop, unless they're coming into the court later on as a lawyer or as a juror or as a judge. This program has the ability to do that. So just kudos to Judge Gerasi and all the folks that have kept this program going for the last 20-plus years. I can tell you the impact it had on me as a young 17-year-old, and I still am using some of those skills today in my career.
Malik, I just got an email from a listener named Sarah who says that she's glad we're having this conversation because it's time America realizes that incarceration doesn't work. And that's all she said in the email. I assume what she means by that is the rates of recidivism is an example, high rates of recidivism, a lack of interest in actual reform or help for those who are going to be, you know, free citizens eventually. And I wonder if you agree with her. Does is it as simple as saying incarceration doesn't work, Malik?
Well, I think that it doesn't work unless you're doing something to make sure that a person is rehabilitated. You know, for years I served on the reentry task force at Catholic Family Center, and it's easy to say let's all just lock people up and throw away the key, particularly when they're young. But if we're not doing alternatives to incarceration and ensuring that people are getting skills that they're going to be productive members of society when they leave prison or jail, you know, that's not a good thing. And we have to remember, unless you're a hardcore murderer, or done something really, really bad, most folks that go into the criminal justice system will leave it. So the question is what skill sets are we giving these folks when they're done with their time in the criminal justice system? So I think that that's what the writer meant by that, and I couldn't agree with it more. We have to make sure that we are giving people the skills to be productive members of society. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see that revolving door of more prisons and more people being locked up and being a drain on society when they really could be a benefit.
Malik, I'll let you go in a second here. How often do you bump into people that you used to work with or met through teen court?
All the time. And in fact, I ran into a young lady a couple of weeks ago who said to me, "You prosecuted me when I stole from McCory's department store." And I said, I did. She said, "Yeah, that was during teen court." And she ended up with community service. But now she's a, you know, productive member of society. Imagine if this person would have got caught up in the criminal justice system. Would she have gone on to college and been successful? If a small little incident, youthful indiscretion at the age of 16 would have ruined her life, where would she have been if it had it not been for teen court and you know, a caring judge that and the jury that dispensed that tough love of community service? Now she's a productive member of society. So absolutely, I run into people all the time that were on the side of attorneys, but also people who went through the process of having their having the ACDs from their their incidences that they had.
All right, Judge, you want to say anything before we let him go?
No, just Malik, thanks for all your service to this community. And I remember you when you served as an attorney. You're certainly a role model. That's the whole purpose of this program, is to have individuals, teens that can serve as role models, other individuals, so they can move in the right direction. So thanks for all you've done.
No, thank you. Thank you. And thank you all for sticking with it. And congratulations on hitting that milestone.
Malik, thank you. Thanks for taking the time. We'll talk to you soon.
No problem. Take care.
That's Malik Evans, a member of Rochester City Council, been on Rochester School Board, and his name is on the program for the first ever Rochester Teen Court from 1997. He was a junior at Wilson Magnet High and was a teen attorney. So you're seeing some of the impact there, and I'm going to ask Judge Geraci to respond to Sarah's comment that incarceration doesn't work. Is that too general, or what do you make of that comment?
I think it is too general. There are certain crimes where incarceration is the only alternative, but when I send people to jail, and I've done it for years now, I always try to send them with a message. And the message is, this is the direction your life is in now. It doesn't have to remain there. You can change the path, even incarcerated. Get involved in programs, substance abuse programs, mental health programs, vocational programs, educational programs, in order to move in a new direction when you come out of there, so you can be a constructive member of our community. And there are other crimes, of course. I've dealt with a lot of violent crimes, homicides, multiple homicides, and rapes and robberies, where individuals need to be incarcerated for long periods of time because they present an extreme danger to the community.
If we are going to incarcerate some, and we are, especially for violent crime, can we do better at working with people who are incarcerated while they are incarcerated? Because unless it is a homicide of some kind, likely there's going to be release. Can we do better to prepare people for being members of society?
Absolutely. I think there had to be more programs within the correctional systems in order to allow people to develop skills to become a constructive member of our community.
And let me get Adam's question. Adam just wants to know what percentage of people who go through the teen court system finish their community service or whatever their sentences are. It's a good question. Kendra, do we know?
Yes, 90% of defendants that come through teen court complete Rochester teen court.
90%?
90%.
So if you missed it earlier, Kendra was saying about 200 teens a year are going through that. So that's 180 out of 200 on average.
That is correct.
That's a high number.
That's a very high number. It has been doing very well since I've taken over the program, as Francis mentioned, and they have been 90% has completed. It's always that one or two that has not completed. The year's not over, so let's hope that it stay that way. Mm-hmm. But it is 90% has been doing well.
Okay, Judge, has that been pretty consistent over the years?
it's probably a little higher now. And I think one of the reasons for that is because of Center for Youth. I wanted just to give credit to Elaine Small and her program for providing support services to these young people. We identify problems in the teen court. They need the support, and they now have that support through the Center for Youth so they can move in a new direction and avoid problems in the future. And that works well.
All right, Francis, 20 years from now, you're going to be the Malik Evans calling into the program. Where are you going to be in 20 years?
Well, I hope to pursue a career in law and, as a matter of fact, hopefully become a judge here in Rochester to continue to serve the community.
If only you had mentors. Is there anyone you can think of?
Yes, as a matter of fact, Judge Gerisi has served as a very significant mentor, as well as all of the attorneys who have served with the program and coached both me and all of the other volunteers in matters from the law to pursuing our dreams.
And Jenna, you're going to be running a bakery in 20 years?
Yes, I am.
A successful, booming bakery by then.
Yes.
Well, I wish you luck. And we didn't ask, by the way, what time of the day this is all going on, Kendra? When does teen court happen?
So teen court happens twice a month, with the third Wednesday of every month is the adjudicative session where a judge presides, and the fourth Monday of every month is our restorative justice court session.
In the afternoon?
It normally starts, so the adjudicative session starts at 4 p.m. on Wednesdays and 5 p.m. on Mondays.
Think of all the time that everyone at this table have put into this. Kendra's the only paid staff, volunteers, and Judge Gerisi adding, no doubt in the 90s you knew you were doing this, it was going to take more of your own personal time. And I know everyone appreciates that, Judge. We do in this community. Their numbers are pretty remarkable. A lot of great success stories. Our thanks to everyone here. Judge Gerisi, thank you. Thanks for telling the story.
Thanks for having us here.
And Kendra, thank you. Appreciate it. Much more success continued for you at Rochester Teen Court.
Thank you so much.
And our thanks to John A. Robinson, a teen juror. Good luck to you, John A. Thank you for telling your story. And Francis Pellegrino, a teen attorney, senior counsel with Rochester Teen Court. Good luck to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to John Andrus, engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.